How are you now? How are you right now? This morning, I assume. I don't think anybody's staying up to listen to this on a Tuesday night, but happy Wednesday morning to you, and hello and welcome to episode 68 of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast presented by Habs Eyes and the Prize. I am Matt Drake, and we're here to talk about your Montreal Canadiens continuing their road trip against the Edmonton Oilers in Edmonton, of course, and they got to take on Connor McDavid. They got to take on the best player in the world, and there's been a string of pretty decent games from the Habs of late. I gotta say, I really liked their last effort against Calgary. I thought they deserved a win in that one, but it wasn't to be. I thought, you know, keep playing. What did I say in the podcast? Say keep playing games like that for the rest of the road trip, and you're gonna have a chance, even though you're coming up against some of the better teams in the West. I would say Vancouver is the tougher challenge. That's gonna be their game on Thursday night. But you got Edmonton. You got the best player in the world. You can't sleep on that one. So it's not gonna be an easy out for sure. So I'm going to take you through the recap, everything that happened in the game. But first, BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with live in-game betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. Your Montreal Canadiens, I gotta say, I was a little bit surprised at how well they started against the Edmonton Oilers. Like I said, best player in the world on the other side. What you really gotta do is you gotta avoid making any kind of mistakes that give him the opening that he needs, because he doesn't need a very big opening. He can weave through multiple players to make a play happen. Just avoid making mistakes, particularly while he's on the ice, and you're probably gonna be okay. And there's honestly not a whole lot going on in the first 5 minutes. Michael Pezzetta got in a fight with Sam Carrick, but really it was low event for the first little bit in that first period there. Odd considering it's two teams that kind of struggle at the defensive aspects of the game. And the Habs, honestly, for the first little while are kind of outplaying the Oilers, but that, of course, cannot last. They do precisely what I said you want to avoid doing, which is make a mistake while Josh Anderson's the one who made the mistake. Make a mistake while Connor McDavid's on the ice. Mike Matheson makes a bit of a bad outlet pass, right? Josh Anderson's kind of standing up near the top of the circle, a little bit more towards the middle of the circle, but he gets the pass. He's got, I think, Ekholm coming down on him, and Anderson just freezes with the puck, and he tries to turn and go to the outside and get around Ekholm, gets stripped. Puck goes right to Connor McDavid, and he does Connor McDavid shit. Dances through everyone, goes to the backhand, and puts it past Samuel Montembeau. It's 1-0 for the Oilers. Really, I went back and forth with a few people about this on Twitter. It wasn't a good pass by Matheson, let's be honest, but Anderson had time there, and he had, I believe, Colin White streaking up the middle. If he just put that puck on his backhand when he got it, instead of trying to turn to the outside and take off with it, which I assume is what he was trying to do, he could have flipped it up the middle, and Colin White might have been gone. At least it would have been a one-on-one. At worst, it would have maybe missed him and gone for an icing and not end up in the back of your net, but alas, 1-0 for the Oilers. Luckily, that was the only fuck-up of the period. They didn't make any more McDavid mistakes. They didn't get any more highlight reel McDavid goals. And they actually had an edge by the end of the period in shot attempts, scoring chances. They had the better scoring chances. Honestly, not a bad period. When you considering the score, really not a bad period for the Montreal Canadiens. In the second period, it's really more of the same. They're getting the better chances. They got more possession. They're generally just looking more threatening than the Oilers. If they can avoid mistakes, they should actually be able to win this game, never mind tie it up at one. All their pressure eventually gives them their second power play. They had one in the first period. It was all right. It wasn't too bad. Ryan McLeod takes a frustrated trip. He trips Jordan Harris. It was going to be a very quick breakout for the Montreal Canadiens. So it was an offensive zone penalty, 200 feet away from his own goal. Not one that you want to see as a coach, but not a whole lot that the Oilers could do to stop what the Habs were doing from a breakout perspective. They're actually doing really well getting the puck out of their zone. And, of course, the power play was actually decent, but much like the one in the first period, they could not do enough. Calvin Pickard really frustrating them in net. And, of course, you miss on an opportunity like that, And it's hockey, man. It's always going to come back and bite you in the ass, and it does. Not long after the failed power play, the Oilers get one of their honestly pretty rare offensive zone opportunities of the second period, and it's Matthias Ekholm coming down from the point. He spots Adam Henrik in front of the net. He's completely uncovered, throws it out front. Henrik just has to tap that one in, and it's 2-0 for the Oilers. Mike Matheson actually took a roughing penalty not long after that, really playing with fire with a super potent Edmonton Oilers power play. And their power play looks extremely good, but the Habs managed to weather that storm, and they go into the third period down 2-0. Are they going to be able to complete a comeback? Well, if you're on Team Tank, you might not want them to, but they don't seem to care about that. Very early in the third period, great zone entry by the top line. Nick Suzuki leaves the puck for Juraj Slafkovský near the line. He goes to the wall, looks back into the middle, throws it out front. Puck's bouncing all over the place, and it takes its final bounce off the leg of Nick Suzuki and into the net past Calvin Pickard. 2-1, the Habs have some life. Then we get back-to-back penalties a little bit later. Right, Juraj Slafkovský first for a trip, and then Leon Draisaitl takes a hooking penalty in the offensive zone during the power play. So we get some 4-on-4 action with Connor McDavid on the ice. Look the fuck out for that guy, or look out for the Habs. Jake Evans on the boards in the neutral zone. All right, he spots Caden Gooley activating on the other side of the ice, makes a great cross-ice pass, tape to tape, and Caden Gooley's in basically alone at this point. He's got speed, and he rips it far side on Pickard. It's 2-2. The Habs all of a sudden are all tied up. They're playing quite the third period. Again, they're getting the better chances. At 5-on-5, they are the better team in this game. We get all the way down to 2.5 minutes to go, and David Savard gets called for hooking Evander Kane while he's trying to shoot. Just too perfect, right? The Edmonton power play can't possibly get stopped again by these Montreal Canadiens, but they do. By the skin of their teeth, they manage to kill that one off too. But then in the dying seconds of the period, we get a bit of a weird collision at center ice between Yoel Armia and Evander Kane. Armia's stick gets kicked up in the process and hits Adam Henrik in the face. The refs review it. They call a 4-minute penalty for high sticking. That's going to bleed into overtime, should there be an overtime. And the Habs managed to kill off about 30 seconds at the end of the period, but they've got, in the overtime frame, 3 minutes and 33 seconds to kill. That is an impossible task. And let me tell you guys, if you didn't see that game, you missed one of the most epic penalty kills I've seen for a 4-on-3 power play in a long time, man. 3 minutes and 33 seconds. They were scratching, clawing. Montembeau had to make some really great saves. They were playing great defensively. Matheson and Savard were out there for, at least 2 minutes of it. They were fantastic, getting in shooting lanes, getting in passing lanes. They were really frustrating, one of the best power plays in the league. And then with like 10 seconds left in the penalty, Connor McDavid has it in the middle. He spots Leon Draisaitl at the bottom of the circle, gives it to him. He snipes it. And that's your final score, 3-2 in favor of the Edmonton Oilers. I'm not mad about it. Look, the Habs didn't need the extra point in the standings anyways. I think they really wanted this one for Martin St-Louis, who is still away from the team, dealing with a family matter. And they gave it their absolute best. You can't be mad about that. They played a great game. They were the better team at 5-on-5. You got a freak accident penalty that nobody can really be mad about. I saw some people saying, oh, it's a bullshit call. I don't think that you can really be upset at the refs about that. And you should take it from me, because I'm never one to shy away from shitting on the refs. The thing is, you're responsible for your stick. An accident or not, that is a penalty. And because there's blood, it is 4 minutes. Now, you could make the argument that maybe they shouldn't be differentiating 2 versus 4 on blood alone. But that's until and unless they change the rules, that was the right call for them to make on the ice. I would also say, though, that I'm not mad at Yoel Armia. What's he supposed to do there? He's trying to make a play on the puck, and because of the way that he collides and the way his stick was kind of like wrapped around Evander Kane, it gets kicked up and it hits somebody in the face. There was no intent. He didn't, you know, make a boneheaded mistake or anything there. He was trying to make a play, and it turned out badly. And unfortunately, a power play like the Oilers, man, I expected them to score a heck of a lot faster in that overtime period. I thought maybe this thing's going to last like a fucking minute once we get into the 4-on-3. But boy, did they try to make it to the end of that, and they almost did. If they made it to the end of that, you know, the second that they got to 4-on-4, they would have scored and they would have won that game. And then Tank Nation would be even more upset about that because, you know, they get the extra point as well, which they don't really need at this stage. Frankly, they didn't need the point that they got, but they earned it. So anybody, any members of Tank Nation who are upset about that, I would implore you, just take a look. You know, rewatch that game. Take a look at the stats page. Whatever you need to do. That was another really good game from them, where you could make an argument that they deserved a regulation win. Calvin Pickard was very good in that game. If he didn't play as well as he did, I'm pretty sure they could have taken that one. I don't know, maybe 4-3, 5-4, something like that. And I play up the score there because I'm also assuming that if we're going to say, well, Calvin Pickard needs to have a bad game, well, we also need to assume that maybe Samuel Montembeau wouldn't have had his best game as well. And he also played pretty good. So, look, that was a really good game that, you know, unfortunately they get a loser point out of it that nobody really wants, but, you also need to take a look at how well they played in order to get that loser point. I think even loser point might be a little bit rough to say about that game because they didn't play like losers. They played like absolute fucking winners. Honestly, it was an entertaining game to watch, and they played really well. So, that's a good segue into, I guess, your silver lining of the night. And man, I'm literally recording this immediately after the game ends, so I haven't really taken any time to sit down and think about it. Who should be the silver lining of the night? There were plenty of players that you could pick, but who stood out to me, honestly, the most in that game was Yoel Armia, having quite the resurgence this season after being sent down to Laval. Kind of seemed like, you know, his career was maybe in the balance at this point. Like, is he even going to stay in the NHL anymore? And then when he comes back, he starts playing a little bit better, and he's just done nothing but get better and better and better. And now on this line with, you know, Alex Newhook and Joshua Roy, he's playing some of the best hockey we've ever seen him play in a Montreal Canadiens uniform. He was a problem on the ice for the Edmonton Oilers in that game. I'm talking turnovers left, right, and center. Any time that he had even close to a bead on a guy that was carrying the puck, he was immediately on him, getting in his face, putting a shoulder on him, and stick lifting him. And he was super clean all game long up until that one freak accident. So, you know, anybody who's getting down on Yoel Armia, I know I didn't see very much of that online, but I'm sure there are some people that are upset with him over that. Don't be. That was a freak accident in an otherwise fantastic game from him. He played great. He was big in some of those penalty kills that they had during the regulation time. And I think they may have struggled to get to an overtime period without him. And it's been great watching his resurgence this year. I've talked about this a few times. I don't know what it means, honestly. Maybe it means that he becomes tradable in the offseason. Maybe it means that he becomes indispensable to the Montreal Canadiens because they feel like really he could help shore up the middle six in a way that nobody they can go out and get in free agency or in the draft is going to be able to do immediately. I mean, he's got what, 1 year or is it 2 years left on his contract? Now I got to go double check that. One more year. He's got one more year after this. So keep playing like this. And I mean, there's a possibility, like I said, he could get traded in the offseason or maybe next year at the deadline if the Habs are kind of out of it or if they're, you know, not quite in the playoff race. Maybe they make a decision to move him at that point with you know, in the final year of his contract as a rental, he could have some value to a playoff team. It's opening up a lot of options the way that he's playing right now. Who knows? He might get to the end of next year. Maybe he plays well enough that he signs a team-friendly deal and becomes more of a utility guy that they can use in their middle or bottom six for the next couple of years. I mean, he's playing extremely useful hockey right now. You could still argue that he's a little bit overpaid with the $3.4 million AAV, but you certainly can't argue against what he's doing on the ice. He's playing excellent hockey, and really just been, it's been fun to see that resurgence from him. So silver lining of the night goes to him, but we're going to keep going. We got some more performances we got to outline there as well. I really loved the top line in this one, and yeah, I'm going to go with the whole top line as a silver lining. Juraj Slafkovský, Cole Caufield, Nick Suzuki, they were excellent. What the Oilers did was early on in the game, they were playing the McDavid line out against Josh Anderson's line, right? The third line. And after one or two shifts, they got away from that. Like, they actually got a goal against the Anderson line. McDavid did. And then they went away from that for whatever reason, and they started playing McDavid's line against the second line. Now, the second line, Joshua Roy, Yoel Armia, Alex Newhook, already talked about Armia anyways, but the other two, and as a trio, they did well against McDavid, but that freed up the top line to basically play against, you know, whoever Edmonton was throwing out there against them, and it wasn't McDavid, and they ran over the Oilers at even strength. They were fantastic. They were absolutely fantastic. That goal that they scored at the start of the third period was just the culmination of their efforts. Like, they were hemming the Oilers in their zone with regularity through the first two periods. And it was a minor miracle for the Oilers that they didn't already have one up on the board before they got to the third period. And then early in the third period, it was just like, all right, boys, let's go to work. And they went out and immediately got one. Bit of a freak bounce. But listen, you don't get freak bounces like that all the time when you're playing badly. You do get freak bounces like that a lot more often when you're spending a lot of time in the offensive zone and you're making plays into the middle of the ice like that. That's how you can create bounces like that. You know, the old saying is what? Sometimes you got to be good to be lucky, right? Sometimes you got to be lucky to be good. It goes both ways. But in this case, they were good in order to be lucky. And a lot of the things that they were doing in the first two periods just weren't rolling their way. And then they get that one at the start of the third and, you know, call it a freak bounce all you want, but that freak bounce doesn't happen if they're not doing the right things, you know, shift after shift after shift, and then just eventually having one actually roll right for them. So really great game from them, and in particular, Nick Suzuki was good. And Cole Caulfield, man, is he snake-bitten this season. He had a couple of opportunities in the third period from his spot where he just barely missed the net. It's coming. He's going to eventually start putting those pucks in the net. I don't know if it's going to take a little bit more work with Dr. Schott just to fine-tune things a little bit. He's getting velocity on the puck, that's for sure. He's not lacking in that whatsoever. It's almost like his timing is just a tad off, but he's getting to the right areas. He's getting those opportunities. So I wonder if whatever injury he was having earlier in the season is gone at this point. But he looked very good in that game, and Juraj Slafkovský as well, very physical. Going to the dirty areas, took one penalty, but I thought that penalty was actually bullshit. I don't know if I mentioned it during the recap or not, but yeah, it was on Brett Kulak. It was a tripping penalty, and his stick was just kind of there, and Kulak looked like he was already falling. I don't think that the stick had anything to do with it, but the stick was in the area, so the ref just called it, so I thought that was kind of a bullshit call, but you know, they killed it off and ended up actually scoring on the 4-on-4 that happened afterwards, so eh. What are you going to do? Very good line, or very good game, rather, from the top line. I mentioned the second line. They did a fantastic job against Connor McDavid. They actually had higher expected goals. I think their expected goals percentage was over 60%. I'm going to go double-check that right now as I'm speaking, because I don't want to misspeak. But they did really well. I mean, it was weird to me when they switched, like I said, because McDavid had the goal already when he was playing against Anderson's line, and it seemed like they were going to be able to exploit that, and then they jumped away from it, and I was like, you know, we get into the third period, and I had to go into the EOTP chat, and I'm like, have they been playing McDavid against Joshua Roy's line all night? And Nathan Nee came back to me. He's like, yeah, actually, they have. They had the couple of shifts, and then they went right against that, and I'm right. Yeah, 62.06% expected goals for in favor of the Montreal Canadiens when that second line was out. And they did that with most of their shifts against Connor McDavid. So really good game from all of them. That's why Yoel Armia was your silver lining of the night. He made it really difficult for them to get anything going. So did Joshua Roy with his defensive acumen. And Alex Newhook, man, played a really good game. That's not an easy task. This, you know, you're not at your natural position playing center. And you got to go against the best fucking player in the world, man. That's rough. If they got shelled in that game, I wouldn't have really blamed them, but they didn't. They played a very even game against the top line that the Oilers have to offer. Outside of that, we got to talk about the D a little bit. You know, Mike Matheson, I thought he played a really good game. He made some really key blocks for them, especially on some penalty kills. He did take one boneheaded penalty that I didn't like, and he made that one questionable pass to Josh Anderson that precipitated the Connor McDavid goal. Didn't love that, but I thought overall Matheson was, he was cromulent. He was useful in that game. David Savard played very well. He also took a penalty. That was the one, the hook on Evander Kane in the third period. But I don't, like, it's one of those penalties where you either let him shoot or you take a penalty. And I think in that situation with where he was kind of like just inside the faceoff circle near the slot, not a good area to just allow somebody to shoot. So I'm willing to give him that one, because outside of that, he made a lot of blocks, killed penalties very well. Kind of the same things that you could say for Matheson, maybe one or two small things in the game that you didn't really like, but definitely overall a good game. Arbor Jacki was excellent. One of his best games. Super physical. Getting involved offensively. He absolutely obliterated a puck at one point in the second period that I don't think, like, people don't want to get in the way of his shot anymore. He's getting into that, you know, that Shea Weber kind of territory where the velocity that he's getting is just terrifying for people. He also, I think, needs to maybe spend a little time with Dr. Shot, though, because rein in that velocity just a tad. Get it more on net, and he's going to start scoring goals in bunches. He had, I got to pull up the stats again, because I wanted to make sure that I mentioned this. 79.65% expected goals for on Arbor Jacki in that game. A lot of that had to do with the high danger scoring chances, which the Habs were 5-1 in high danger scoring chances when he was on the ice. His biggest problem early in his career was limiting high danger chances against. He had a serious struggles trying to make that happen. It's not happening anymore. He's taking a lot smarter routes to puck carriers in the offensive zone, or the defensive zone rather. He's better positioned. And he's just not giving anything up easy. He's quickly becoming like a unicorn on D because he's capable of doing things offensively that some guys aren't. He's becoming a lot more of a defensive stalwart in his own zone. And it just so happens that if anything goes south in a game, he'll beat the fuck out of almost anybody that you've got on your team. So, yeah, Arbor Jacki, very fun guy to watch play hockey. And, of course, I can't end it without talking about Caden Gooley. He had a lot of shifts against Connor McDavid in that game, and that's not easy to do. But he fared very well. And then as soon as they got to that 4-on-4 opportunity, that open ice, he just exploited it right away. I felt like at the end of the game, he ended up having a pretty solid overall effort, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I think there's definitely some concern about the Montreal Canadiens blue line, right? We don't know what it's going to look like next season, but I'll tell you what, when I see a game like that against the best player in the fucking world, and they manage to hold him to one goal, and they drag it to overtime, they kill a bunch of penalties, I got to say, you know, for a young defensive core on a team that's clearly not going to be making the playoffs, and they've made trades at the deadline, and they didn't make very many of them, but they made trades at and before the deadline that are trades that a rebuilding or a seller's team would make. Still, this team has been able to play some very solid games against very good teams, against very good players. I think that should quell some of our fears about what this blue line might look like next season. And I think it should make us all feel pretty good about how the rebuild is going, because this is, if they can do this now with, you know, and not even their optimal roster based on the players that they have now, and they're going to be adding players down the road, maybe in free agency as well, who knows. I think this is going to be a much better team next year, and I think their D is going to be a big part of it. And I think, you know, you want to talk about trades, I think a lot of teams around the league are probably looking at the Habs right now and going, all right, who would you be willing to part ways with out of your D, right? Is it Savard? Is it Jordan Harris? Probably going to get a lot of calls about Jacki, although I think those calls are going to be maybe not getting returned at this point. Probably getting calls about some of the guys he got in the AHL. Logan Mailloux. David Reinbacher is going to make his debut pretty soon. Like, they've got a lot of really good players in the blue line. Once they figure out who they want to keep, they're going to be able to maybe package some of those guys and improve the forward group. It's going to be fun. This team's not going to be bad forever. And look, they were not bad against the Oilers. They were very good against the Oilers. So you got to give them credit where credit is due. And look at that. I just crossed the 24-minute mark. So we are going to end this one now because over 24 minutes, ça, c'est une soirée inconnue pour les employés de soutien. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Apple. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT. Drop me a follow. I would appreciate that very much. This episode was brought to you by BetOnline. Thank you, as always, for listening. And of course, à la prochaine.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.